Of all the media available for consumption in the world today, radio may be the least well-equipped to handle a discussion of silence. We just don't like silence on the radio from either end. On our end, it makes us nervous, like something broke. But silence in the world at large can be a beautiful thing, made more precious by its scarcity. Our guest this hour has visited some mostly silent places, silent of human sounds anyway. Erling Kagge visited both North and South Poles and Mount Everest. They had a profound effect, as you might imagine, and they helped inspire a book of thoughts about silence called Silence. There is a subtitle, In the Age of Noise. Erling Kagge is an explorer, author, publisher, art collector, and more. He wrote the original version of Silence in Norwegian. The English translation is by Becky L. Crook. Erling Kagge is on the phone from Oslo. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Good morning.
So was silence, or at least solitude, among the reasons you wanted to visit the poles and Mount Everest?
A little bit, yes. But first of all, I think we are all born explorers. So, you know, I think, you know, it's a natural state of being to be curious and to explore the world and explore yourself. And as a Norwegian who's being used to the cold and the snow and the ice, it somehow was natural for me to kind of try to walk to the poles and climb the highest mountain on Earth. But I learned a lot about silence on those expeditions, that's for sure.
Compared to the other places on Earth, how quiet were they?
You know, I walked to the South Pole in total solitude for 50 days and nights in the midnight sun. And I didn't have a radio, and I didn't see any humans or animals at all. That's kind of changed me. And because it was this, when I stopped the walking, it was this. It was a silence. I could both hear and feel the silence. And later in life, I got three daughters, and eventually they became teenage daughters. And life has been about noise ever since.
Yeah, you write in the book about trying to convince your three daughters of the value of silence. I wonder how that went over.
You know, it was really difficult because they're totally attached to their phones and their devices. They're always connected. You know, they're always kind of running away from themselves. And I sat down to write this book. And my two oldest daughters really like it. But the youngest is now 16.
All right. So let's see. You've given lectures on the subject of silence, too. How much did you wrestle with the sounds that you would use in those to convey a lesson about silence?
You know, I'm just surprised that, you know, so many people are interested in silence. I'm very happy for that, because I think noise and sounds, of course, is part of life, but so is silence. And noise is very much about living through other people, living through your devices, departing from yourself, while silence, especially inner silence, is about exploring yourself and getting to know yourself. And that's, of course, much more complicated than noise. And that's why we usually prefer noise to silence, but I'm taken by surprise by this book that it's, you know, so many people are interested, and that's a great privilege, and, you know, just talking to you this morning.
So is the idea of getting to know yourself, I mean, you think this is one of the major challenges of silence, that we're sort of forced to be alone with our thoughts?
Yes, I think that's that's definitely a challenge. But I think, you know, it's not only about getting to know yourself. It's also about, you know, relaxing. It's about doing the opposite of what you usually do during the day. Like me, for instance, you know, I Google something, I find what I'm looking for, and 20 minutes later, I'm still Googling, or I'm checking the news 3 or 5 times in an hour, although I know nothing has happened. And then you need a little bit of silence. You need a little break. You need to shut out the world for a few minutes or some hours or maybe days.
I could totally relate when you wrote in the book about the Google process you just described, because, I mean, I don't know, it seems like all of us go through that now, where you start off looking for, you know, a place in Scotland, and next thing you know, you're looking at Chinese coins of the 13th century.
Exactly. And, you know, it's, It's nothing wrong with it, but it's I think it's we are born that way because man has always had a hard time dealing with the present. So it has always been tempted to instead of sitting alone doing nothing in silence. We humans are always try to do something. So instead of doing nothing, we do something. So that's how we're born. But I think, you know, every now and then, maybe a few times a day, it's important to listen to yourself and not go for all this noise. And when I talk about noise, I'm not thinking about sounds as such. I'm thinking more about all distractions throughout the day and all expectations you get from different apps. That's what I'm thinking about as noise.
All right, so less about silence in the sense of the lack of audio than and just in the lack of activity. I mean, just a sense of stillness more than anything else, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly. And I have been traveling the world, kind of searching for, you know, almost total silent places, like in Antarctica. But even in Antarctica, although it's very quiet, it doesn't get totally silent. Once in Paris, I went to this room which is made for having absolutely no sounds at all. And when I got into the room and closed the door, I could still, you know, kind of hear my heart beating, kind of my blood circulating. So although it was quiet in the room before I entered the room, it became a little bit noisy as soon as I was there.
Huh, okay, so you added something to the silent room. Erling Kagge is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an explorer, author, publisher, art collector. He does lots of things. He's written a book in Norwegian called Silence, subtitled In the Age of Noise, translated from the Norwegian by Becky Crook. We'll come back and talk more with Erling Kagge and maybe take some phone calls and emails from you about your own musings on silence and our need for it. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our topic today is silence. It is also the title of Erling Kagge's book, Silence, subtitled In the Age of Noise. He knows from whence he speaks about silence, not just the absence of sound, but the absence of really any activity for a few moments there. Anyway, he has done a lot of things in the world to get to places where there aren't a lot of people around. He's been to both the South and North Pole and Mount Everest. You can join the conversation as we talk about silence. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Erling, what made you decide to turn to a book about silence?
It was because I live a family life back here in Oslo, Norway. And I started to see that my kids, my daughters, they didn't really understand what silence is. They were living through noise. And I asked myself, what is silence? And where is silence? And why is it more important today than ever before? And I was thinking about it, and eventually I sat down to try to write down a few answers, and eventually I had 33 answers to those three questions, and that became my book. And I published it myself here in Norway. Eventually, now it's translated to 37 languages, so I'm absolutely taken by surprise.
Wow, 37 languages. So yeah, that's a very big confirmation that people do want to talk about silence.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's almost extinct in many places, and I think, you know, we are missing it. We would like to have, you know, not only silence because we're born to be together with other people, but having hardly any silence, I think, you know, makes life much poorer.
So let me come back to your daughters as an example, and they're what, 16, 19, and 22 now?
Yeah, no, they are, yeah, exactly. And when I wrote the book, they were older, you know, 3 years younger.
Mm-hmm. All right. So as an example, because you're talking about when they were still teenagers, all of them, their response to the idea of silence was not particularly positive, which brings up a question. Do you think people fear silence?
Yeah, I think, you know, part is fear it in the sense that silence, you know, it can be uncomfortable. It can be boring, of course. It can be embarrassing. And it can also be frightening. So, for sure, and in that sense, noise is so much easier because then it's not about you at all. Then it's about everything else. It's about apps and other people. So, yes, I think, you know, sometimes we fear silence, but at least it could be much more tempting to just, you know, have noise in our lives, for sure. But in the book, I'm writing about the positive sides of silence and about how silence can be your best friend.
Did you fear silence at any time in your own life?
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes I think silence is complicated, and especially when I was a kid. Silence was very much about being alone. It was about not having anyone to play with. It was about being bored or sad. But when I started to grow up through my teenagers and then I became an adult, I started to see, you know, the richness of silence and that silence is a necessity in my life and I think in everybody's life.
Let's talk a bit more about your trip to the South Pole solo. You describe Antarctica as the quietest place you've ever been, and I just wonder if the silence occasionally got oppressive or did trouble you somewhat.
You know, actually, it hardly didn't. I had a few unhappy moments or hours on my trek, but I walked for about 820 miles, and I kind of enjoyed it. I did not live like that for the rest of my life because I love being with other people. But after a few days, I got into a good rhythm, and I enjoyed being totally left by myself. And I don't think that's because I'm extraordinary. I think most people under those circumstances would find it quite interesting to be alone and to have a goal like walking to the South Pole. And eventually, for me, it was not so much more about getting to the pole, the geographical point as such. It was more about finding my own South Pole. And that's also why I wrote the book, because I want more people to find their own South Poles.
Without necessarily having to go to Antarctica to get there.
Exactly. That would be very crowded and very noisy in Antarctica.
Which is exactly not the point. Erling Kaga is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is called Silence in the Age of Noise. And I, you know, we talked about being left by yourself in Antarctica, but you chucked out the batteries for your two-way radio. Is that right?
Yes. It's not very sympathetic in one way. I wanted to be in total solitude. I wanted to be, you know, without any company or anyone to talk to. But the airplane company flew me out to the northern edge of Antarctica. They insisted on me bringing radio. So I brought the radio, but the last thing I did in the plane was to take the batteries out and leave them in the garbage bin of the plane. So when I actually was standing on the ice and having 820 miles to go, that's the closest place, I didn't have a way to communicate two ways with a civilization. So that maybe sounds, you know, strange when I talk about it on radio, but I felt quite comfortable about it because my goal was to do this without any noise at all.
Well, and you got your wish there. But, you know, I have to guess that you couldn't let your mind wander for long. Because that could be deadly. But I just wonder how your brain handled the combination of not only the silence but the visual sameness you often encountered.
Yeah, but you know it's in Antarctica, almost everything looks pure white and very flat for hundreds of miles, kind of all the way to the horizon. So as you said, that's kind of a visual silence. But when I was alone there, I slowly started to notice that it wasn't completely flat after all. The ice and the snow create the tiny, exciting formations, and the whiteness transformed somehow into nuances of white. It's a bit loose, yellowish, a bit pink. The nature somehow remained the same as always, but it was me who changed. So I kind of became hyper-aware to the world I was experiencing because I wasn't blunted nor distracted by any noise.
So you get a chance to notice the subtle differences in a place that at first glance looks very, very much the same.
Exactly. So it's first I thought, you know, things around me changed, but then I understood Antarctica was Antarctica. I was gradually changing, and I was forced to think through my thoughts completely because there's nowhere to hide around the South Pole. And all the small day-to-day lies and half-truths that we tell ourselves, it seemed absolutely, totally meaningless walking down there.
So let's contrast this with coming back to the big city, coming back to Oslo, and you mentioned that that away from Antarctica, you don't try to create silence around you anymore. Does that mean you did at one time?
Yeah, I'm more and more focused on my inner silence, in a sense that I like sometimes to have it quiet around me. And just today, I've been out in the forest a little for half an hour this morning. But I think, you know, you need to somehow create your own inner silence. You can't wait for silence to come to you. And this silence that you have inside yourself is there all the time. You just need to experience it.
So I wonder, when you got back to civilization, back to Oslo or any other large city, if you were happy to have people around and the sounds around again, or if it troubled you somewhat. I'm just curious to know about the differences in experiences.
I'm very happy to have people around me. The first couple of days and weeks, it was certainly strange to have all the people talking to me. You know, after a few days back home, your washing machine breaks down or you have to pay some bills. So life comes back to normal really quickly. But to be with other people, I think it's, you know, some of the most important things you can do in life. And for me, silence is not about turning you back to the world. It's not living an even more egocentric life. It's more about opening up, see the world differently, and love life even more. So I'm not anti-socializing, and I'm not anti-technology. I think it's just, you know, it's important to stop up sometimes and think about what you're doing. And that's what I learned in Antarctica, and that's what I took back home. But today, I live a life like most people. I go working every morning, and I try to look after my family, try to live, you know, a pretty normal life with lots of noise. But every now and then, I manage to get some silence when I walk to the metro station in the morning. I get some silence when I'm taking a shower, when I'm cooking, not to mention when I'm doing the dishes, when I'm walking. And when I go to bed in the evening, I get some silence, some inner silence.
Erling Kagge wrote all about silence in a book by that name, Silence in the Age of Noise. He's an explorer, author, publisher, art collector, and just all-around doer of many things. You can join the conversation on The Exchange as we talk about silence in our world and how we achieve it, not just the kind where there's the absence of noise, but also where there's just a level of stillness that might not normally exist. You can join the conversation on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Maybe tell us about the quietest place you've ever been, or send an email to jx@jeffnet.org. There are some great stories here, not only from your own life, but from those of other people as well. I love the story of the football player kicking a goal. And I've always wondered, what do people hear in those moments? What did he tell you?
He told me that just when he kicked the ball, it's total silence in his head. He can't hear anything. He does, you know, people are screaming, the audience is screaming, the players are moving, and he's moving, but he doesn't hear anything. It's a total silence. Kick the ball and just kind of get the feeling that this ball is going to hit the goal. And as soon as the ball is inside the goal, you can still not hear anything. But you can see people kind of, you know, shouting, and then he can hear all the noise. But when it's actually happening, when he's focusing, when he's kicking the ball, it's a total silence in his head. And that's also, I think it comes with, you know, I talked to top basketball players, they also say the same. They have total silence in their head, they're kind of hitting for the points.
This sounds like the movie depiction of, you know, the winning goal or the winning basket or the winning home run. The way that it's always done in slow motion with almost no sound, and then they put it back in real time, and then the crowd cheers, and you get the feeling of what happened. So it sounds like it's very much like that in real life.
Exactly. So it's I think that's also what I think. It's you know, in one way, my experiences are extreme. But I think, you know, what I'm extracting from those extreme expeditions, and you know, it's very normal. It's one thing I learned from traveling the world is that, you know, we are pretty much alike, and we have the same desires and the same problems and the same challenges and many of the same pleasures in life.
Erling, you describe a moment of silence before a meal on your trek to the North Pole. Would you relate that story to us?
Yeah, because it's we had walked, my companion, Børge Aasland, another polar explorer, we had walked all the way up to the North Pole for 58 days and nights. We eventually got to the pole. To a great surprise, when we were pitching our tent, an American spy plane flew across the North Pole. And of course, they didn't expect to see any polar explorers, and we didn't expect to see any airplane. And eventually they dropped some food in a container down to us, and we were starving. We opened the container, took it into the tent, and shared the portions exactly in 50% to each. And I was going to grab into the food and just eat it all in one go. And then my friend said, and at this time we were really thin. We did not have enough food. We're eating 6,000 calories per person per day, but that's not sufficient in the polar regions. But it's limited how much you can drag on a sled. And when I was going to dig in, my friend said, "Erling, hesitate for, you know, count to 10 inside yourself. Use 10, 12 seconds doing it, and then start to eat." And then we're counting to 10 slowly. Just focusing on the food, calming down, looking forward to the meal, and then we ate. And of course, then the food tasted much better than it would have done.
You described that as a really rich moment in your life, a rich moment of silence, perhaps unlike any other. Did the richness of that silence, you think, come from anticipation or weariness or something else?
Yeah, it comes from anticipation. And it also comes from that you manage to, what is in English, that you show some restraint, that we did it together. So it's also kind of a collective thing that, you know, we sit down and do something together and resist our temptations for those 10 or 12 seconds, and then dig in and do it all in peace, all in quiet. I think it's a great experience. And of course, having, you know, been in temperatures down to minus 60 Fahrenheit, starving, lots of frostbites, many frustrations, have been attacked by a polar bear, so it's also many dangers. And eventually you sit down at the pole itself, obviously no human beings anywhere near but this airplane, then facing the food and managing to control yourself and then enjoy it all. Was a fantastic experience.
And as you say, after that, silence in itself is rich. It is exclusive and luxurious. This is the English version again. But you say it's not something spiritual. And honestly, the way we've been talking so far, I mean, it was sounding very Zen-like or you know, at least something, some sort of contemplative practice like meditation, but you say it's not spiritual in itself.
I think I had to be a bit critical to myself because I in one way, I don't think about this as spiritual. I think it's very, you know, down to earth. My ideas about silence and the importance of silence in the day of daily lives. But I see your point, Jeffrey. I think actually I was a bit inaccurate in that sentence in the book because I think it has a spiritual side, not in a religious way maybe, but it certainly has a spiritual side, what I'm writing. So I agree with you.
Let me, we'll pick up the idea of it being exclusive and luxurious. I like the idea of silence as a luxury in the world today, which it may indeed be. Erling Kagge, our guest on The Exchange, his book is called Silence in the Age of Noise. We'll come back and talk more with the author. You can join the conversation on The Exchange, share stories about silent moments in your own life that you've truly appreciated or perhaps truly didn't. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Erling Kagge and you. In a minute 20. On the Jefferson Exchange for our final segment. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Appreciate you listening today. Erling Kagge is our guest from Norway. He's an explorer, author, publisher, art collector, and more. He has visited the North Pole and the South Pole and Mount Everest and has put together some thoughts about the things he appreciated about those places. It's called Silence. His book is called Silence in the Age of Noise. You can join the conversation on The Exchange as we talk about the 33 essays he's written and musings about silence. 800-838-3760 to describe some silence in your own life that you either relished or didn't appreciate. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Erling, I guess I was a little surprised after these polar experiences, and there are many other things you've done in life, long boat trips to West Africa and things like that, that have really taken you away from civilization for long periods. But it sounds like you just kind of get back into your civilization routine, go back to autopilot, as you put it, pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I think that's it's a season for everything, and I really enjoy, you know, my daily life. I think it's a big privilege to be able to have a job like I do. I enjoy work, I enjoy my colleagues, and most of the time I enjoy my daughters. Sometimes they give me a really hard time, of course, and you know it's just difficult to be a father, but most of the time it's fantastic. So I think you should not diminish, you know, the daily routines. I think they are absolutely enriching, but you know, for a while, it has been too much noise, and then I need silence.
I have to ask, though, because your oldest daughter, is now 22, so not a teenager anymore, and I wonder if her feelings about silence have evolved in the 3 years since you first set this to paper in Norwegian.
Yes, it has. She read the book, and she started to see her life in, you know, slightly different perspective. She understood that if she kept on living through other people, living through her devices, forgetting about herself, you know, getting this restlessness you get when you're always available, and also, you know, we quite often feel unhappy, unsatisfied. And she started to see that she didn't have to change her life in a big way, but she had to change her life, you know, in a small way. That she also needed silence. So. For sure, and also her sister, number two, she also, you know, slowly started to change her life. Maybe partly due to my having read my book, but also I think, you know, it's human. And when I see people who are always living through other people, they, you know, they usually complain that life is short, that time passes, you know, so fast, and they don't, you know, get to do anything. And they are right, because of course life feels short if you're wasting it by time living through your technology. And as I said earlier on, I'm not anti-technology, but just kind of getting too addicted to the technology. And of course, thousands of people working day and night to get us addicted to all this technology. And we have to be aware. And well, my youngest daughter, she's kind of maybe too young. So she read my book and she felt, you know, silence is still about, you know, boredom to me. It's still about being sad. It's still about not having anyone to hang out with. But I think now she's, you know, slowly she's starting to see that silence also has some very good sides.
That was actually a very powerful observation one of them had when they were younger, was that the equation that you just pointed out of silence with sadness.
Yeah, and you know, 1 minute of silence if anyone dies, and I think, you know, when you get sad, it's, you know, you turn silent, and that's how it is, and that's how it is for me too. And then, you know, it has written so many books about the negative sides of silence and sadness and silence, but I want to write a book about how silence can be a friend, how silence can be an important thing in your life, and how silence can be, you know, something you relate to for a few minutes or some hours every day.
And you do rely on the work of previous authors. I'm glad that you point out that this is not just an age of technology thing, that we can't sit in silence, because Blaise Pascal noted our inability to sit in silence about four centuries ago.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's very interesting that, reading Pascal, you see that this is not something new, that man has always found the present to hurt. And as Pascal writes, that it has always been extremely hard for us, for human beings, to sit alone in a room doing nothing. This he wrote in the 1640s. And he writes that instead of doing nothing, you do something. And that's the beginning of all your problems. And of course, it was, you know, it was difficult in the 17th century, but today it's so much more extreme. It's so many more temptations. It's so, you know, so many alternatives. It's so much to do, and it's so close to us. You know, just to turn on your phone, and you have all these possibilities. So. Today we're living in the age of noise, and I think it's risky, because I think it's very much about having this huge opportunity to live a rich life, and then we're wasting parts of it to do, you know, quite often totally meaningless things with our different devices.
And it's really surprising when you point out that that science has indicated that our ability to focus now comes in bursts shorter than that of a goldfish.
Yeah, that surprised me too. Our attention span is getting shorter and shorter, and now, you know, even shorter than, you know, a fish. And that's also, you know, it is a bit frightening, I think, that, you know, we get such short attention span. It's a bit sad too that you know, it's that they're not able to think, you know, any thoughts through, and also it's a, you know, it's in addition to that, it's also a fact that our IQ has been going down since 2007 when the smartphones first came. So while, you know, the previous 100 years we humans have become smarter and smarter, the last 10 years, you're actually getting dumber and dumber, thanks to, you know, the way we're living. So somehow we can laugh a little bit about it, but, you know, it's not good for humankind, I think.
Well, and then you get further into some studies here that were done. For example, the one that really produces an oh my god moment, a study on people being alone, or they could opt to not be alone if they could get an electric shock. Would you detail that for us?
Yeah, there was a study by two American universities that people sitting alone in a room doing nothing, like Pascal was writing about. And that means that you're not having a window to look out of, you're not having any phones, no nothing close to you, just sitting there doing nothing, looking into the wall. And then people asked Vincent to do it for 15 minutes. And the only way to get out was to push a button that would give you electrical shock. And the shock was quite painful, and everybody knew, but still, many of the people that were, you know, tested out by this scientist, they didn't manage to sit for 15 minutes. And so they pushed the button to get out of the room and got the shock to, you know, to avoid silence. And even one person got so desperate, so just pushing and pushing and pushing the same button again and again and get and then get, you know, repetitive electrical shocks to avoid silence. And those people are just ordinary people like you and me. And I think it's almost a bit shocking, actually, how, you know, how much we try to avoid silence. And I think the reason is because in the silence, you get to meet yourself. And that's what we quite often, you know, try to avoid.
It was the second time you've mentioned that it's about getting to know ourselves, which can trouble us just a bit. You go into quite an exploration, Erling, of people and diversions, like our smartphones, for example. Are you saying, though, that we are pretty much biologically incapable of achieving satisfaction?
For a long time, yes. But for shorter periods, no. But, you know, it's what satisfies us for 1 minute, 1 hour. You know, it's necessarily doesn't satisfy us afterwards. So I think, you know, it's man has always had a hard time being satisfied for long. And, you know, in one way, that's a good thing, too, because we need to move on. We need to relate to the world. And so that's, you know, that also has a good side, but it's, you know, but we have to be aware that to be satisfied is a complicated thing. And I think today, you know, to avoid to think about it, I think, you know, people are escaping and noise is a way to escape. And while I was a kid, I was bored because I didn't have anything to do. Nothing was happening. While today, when I look at my kids, I think, you know, they are bored because too many things are happening. They have too many options. And they're bored in the same way, but for different reasons.
So when I think about this cycle you described, particularly with phones and the brain and the way that we get that you know that little jolt of dopamine when we get onto our smartphones or when we see that somebody liked our stuff on Facebook or something and it goes away and we have to do it again and again. In that way, I wonder if the search for silence has brought you as much satisfaction as the silence itself.
That's a good question. Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, to be on the way is, you know, part of the whole thing. And sometimes I really get deep into silence and explore myself and see myself in a, you know, a different, you know, perspectives. But on other occasions, I don't succeed. I maybe just get a little bit of silence. But that can also be, you know, satisfying to try to search for it. And but it is complicated. Life is complicated, and it should be complicated. So you know, sometimes I succeed, other times I don't. But it's the search is for sure meaningful.
Well, we've talked about the difference between silence and the lack of sound. I do want to go a little more to the lack of sound thing, because much has been said about the effects of human noise on nature. But you point out in this book that even bird songs have changed in urban areas.
It definitely does, and I think, you know, I hadn't been thinking about it before I sat down to, you know, research silence and write my book. But if you listen to birds in a city, you know, the same bird, and then you go into the wilderness and listen to the birds, you know, the same kind of birds, they for sure have, you know, different sound. And then, you know, people have been, you know, checking out birds living close to hospitals when, you know, we hear the ambulance leaving and returning. They're much louder and it's less variety. So they kind of spend energy not on having a variety the way they're singing, but using, you know, energy to make it loud so all the birds can, you know, hear the song, although we have all this noise in the neighborhood. And of course, you know, one of the reasons the birds are singing is because, you know, it's about mating. And that's making it more difficult in the cities than it does in more rural areas.
Wow. So humans have kind of messed up nature in many senses, but we broke silence for nature and through technology essentially broke the ability to be silent for long for ourselves, which then brings us back to you and the book. Are there some recommendations you make for how we can find a silence, how we can find it to be okay to be with ourselves?
Yes, because, you know, it is a fact for sure, for certain, but it's, I think, you know, it's, many people said to me that I'm too busy, in other words, you know, they feel maybe too important in life, you know, that they can actually set time aside for silence, and they maybe have one or three or four kids, and that's, you know, that's all, so much about noise. But I think they're wrong. I think, you know, almost everybody has some time for silence, and, you know, when my kids are small, of course, I didn't have much time for silence, but I had a little bit of time for silence. And that's, you know, when you get up in the morning, you can have some silence. When you, throughout the day, when you walk to the metro, when you do the dishes, when you go to bed, maybe in the shower, you know, you have some time for inner silence. So I think, you know, it's easy to underestimate yourself and your own possibilities for silence.
And silence can certainly be there in the presence of noise, as you point out. The book is called Silence. Yeah. It is subtitled In the Age of Noise. It's the work of Erling Kagge, Norwegian explorer, author, publisher, art collector, and more. Erling, thank you so much for sharing the book with us.
Thank you. Thank you for good chat.
All right. Take care.